Yep. Sarah.
What do you see as the role of foundations in this picture, and what are the problems with that?
Could we hold off on that, because I think we're going to talk a little bit about some of the plans
things
that
we're doing.
We're moving ahead. Some of the things we're doing. Yeah.
I'd like to make a comment instead of a question, and it's actually indirectly related to that, about supporting artists who are already making art who are in the universities. When the NEA was doing away with support for individual artists, I was one of the people who gave some testimony about that, and I had researched the previous 5 years of grants to individual visual artists.
Can everybody hear Susan back there?
Had 70% of them were members of the College Art Association, which has over 7,000 individual artists, visual artist members, 75% of them in higher education. Mm-hmm. So I argued that those grants to individual artists were a way of supporting higher education and supporting the artists that were in higher education. So my argument fell on deaf ears. But that's
exactly
one
right.
way to support, because those artists, and the other thing that's related to what you said, Alberta, is the College Art Association standards and guidelines, the one that is most often requested and used is the one on the MFA as a terminal degree and exhibition and performance counting as publications. And it's used by tenure and promotion committees.
Yeah.
And that's been around since 1970.
Yeah.
I do want to give one response to your question, which is not on the agenda, which is right now many foundations make a totally we face it with Red Cat, which does a mix of things brought in from the outside and things that are
generated
on campus. And many foundations say, if you've got stuff generated on campus that you're presenting, you're no longer a professional site. It's worse than the visual arts, where we can't show a student in our gallery, because almost every arts foundation in the United States, museums are the same way, that if a student work is included, then you're reduced to amateur status.
That's interesting.
And so
that's true.
With getting funding if you're a student.
That's true.
I've been a professional for 30 years, but because I'm an MFA student, I can't enter all these grants because I'm a student.
Although that's a role that presenters and other actors play. Yeah.
I think it's a subtle thing, because I understand why one doesn't want to support stuff that stays only inside the university. It's trying to see what's actually happening instead of this old-fashioned division.
I think that Sandra's going to have some responses to this as well, Sarah.
In terms of what presenters do.
Yeah.
I actually, maybe this is a good prologue, because my name is Dana Woodco, and I'm currently the project director for a pilot project called the Center for Creative Research, and Stephen's just given the arguments in total for a lot of what we're doing. It's a pilot project, and what we're doing is taking a small group of artists and trying to innovate the ways in which those artists interact with the institution in a way that is not at all familiar to any of us. We're not product-oriented. We're not about creating work. We're about the creative research process. And that comes in part out of our myth of origin, which is when some senior artists, and right now we're exclusively working with choreographers.
On campuses? Are they on faculty on campuses?
Well, they're mixed. It's a mixed group. But they said to themselves, art professionals have a context in which to interact with one another, and we can pose investigative questions, share research findings, and we don't have that as artists. Where could we find that? And the obvious place was that activity takes place in the university, which is in the business of investigation, research, findings, et cetera. And so those parallel agendas seem to make a very good match. What I wanted to say in response to two things that that Stephen and Sandra also mentioned is that it took a relationship with a really enlightened funder, in this case the Andrew W. Mellon Foundation, which said, let's see how we can bring some things together that we're already interested in, higher education and the arts. And also, it took relationships with the presenters. We have found tremendous success in working with presenters on campus as the portal through which we can connect to the university, because they can do a marrying of the administration's agenda, which increasingly seems to be a research and elevating research to a super high status. Unfortunately, maybe to the detriment sometimes of teaching, which is bad for faculty, good for us, but also allows us to reach faculty who would maybe see us in a much more limited kind of a way, but because the presenter can kind of broker this relationship.
Let's let Sandra talk about this. Yes. That's exactly where we're headed.
No,
thank you.
I mean, that's almost enough said.
There's one more. Elizabeth?
Yeah. Well, I'm just interested at some point, maybe later, exploring the idea about collaborations which may be international or Elizabeth-based French-American cultural exchange, particularly, you know, Franco-American, because I think, A, there are possibilities to do creative work that might not be done because of the lack of recognition across the board in America. And H&M Theatre is one of our programs. I'm thrilled to hear you talk about Michel Nivelle, because they were very involved in that, and others. And there really are opportunities that may not be known for getting creative work done.
The Etant Donné has become like a sidekick for us. It's so central in our lives.
Well, many of these remarks suggest the importance of colleges and universities as platforms for performance production, for the actual promotion of artistic product. Yeah. And that's again, one of the things that we focused on at the Assembly and that's under-acknowledged, and which Sandra may have something more to say about.
Yeah, no, I mean, most of my comments are going to focus in that zone about presenting as one of those great platforms for integrating across the campus and an entry point to the campus and its resources. And, you know, Stephen has said, for a century, for more than 100 years, campuses have played really a leading role in creating and disseminating the arts in America.
Can everybody hear Sandra?
Post-World War II, a lot of this activity heated up and became really crucial to artists and their audiences. You saw the proliferation of performing arts centers being built on campuses throughout the country, and they typically perform three or four functions. They're incubators of new work. They provide critical support for residencies for artists and provide a context for their work. They're educators of young artists and future audiences. They are presenters of live performance, but not only that. They're not just a distribution network. And they're catalysts for cultural awareness in their community. And oftentimes, presenters are the leading connectors to these communities with their programs. About one-third of the presenters in the United States, there are 7,000 professionally staffed presenting organizations in the U.S., according to our research. About one-third, there are about 2,300 campuses that have presenting programs that receive direct campus support. And this is long-standing activity. As I said, 40-some years ago, our association was formed out of that group of campuses. They reach out into the community, to schools, to other institutions. They're providing sometimes the most consistent reach into communities that higher education has to offer. They are commissioners of new work. They encourage student work, faculty work, work from outside the United States. A high percentage of presenters are working internationally, 80%, and it's the same percentage on campuses. Masterworks, works by master artists, and the full diversity of arts production that you might find in outside of the campus, and in some cases, this is the only place you're going to find it outside of major metropolitan areas. So when I approached the Assembly a couple of years ago, the idea was to raise the level of dialogue about all of this and begin to talk about an ongoing role for campuses in advancing contemporary culture and what was their role in sustaining the arts on campus and in community. And could we talk about their role in the ecology of establishing a real comprehensive system of support for creating and disseminating work? Lee Bollinger, who co-chaired the Assembly with Nancy Cantor, was at Columbia and had done a keynote a couple years ago at our conference. And one of the questions he posed was, who or which institutions outside the usual free market will assume responsibility for the health and vitality of contemporary culture? And his answer, as Stephen has indicated, was universities could become important patrons of the arts, making strategic investments in arts and culture that align specifically with the mission of higher education institutions. And that's key, and presenters do this. They connect with the research, education, and community engagement mission. And it's an argument for some of the support systems that have been devised over the years. And suggesting that the type of creativity that happens in a campus setting has to be supported by the underlying foundation of wealth that allows it to occur. Same as in the sciences, as Alberta said. So the convening really initiated a national kind of conversation on these fronts and about the existing and even the emerging models and relationships on campuses. We talked about reaching students K-12 and continuing learning in the arts. We talked about how you engage faculty and administration and relating to the arts and educational and research initiatives going on campus, very much what Dana is indicating. Building partnerships in local communities, there's a tremendous amount of work on that front. Integrating the artists and the arts into the full range of campus commitments and academies. Extending the interinstitutional partnerships and collaborations across campuses. And taking special responsibility for engaging audiences in the community and on campus in confronting difficult developments in contemporary society. A lot of civic dialogue work. And so we were encouraged after the assembly to ratchet up the number of presenters who could really tell their stories that advance the values and priorities of a campus, that would engage the faculty, the administrators, and students in some creative and innovative, unique ways and help to advance the mission, but also to take a look at the higher education associations. To get them really thinking about how to integrate the campuses and inspire creativity and imagination in students and faculty in new ways. So part of what we're doing, working with Alberta and a number of campuses, we've created a sort of creative campus project. It's a multi-year initiative that will do some research. We'll look at a whole set of campus-based activities with presenters and other art forms and the academy. And we'll look at higher education associations. So I want to talk a little bit about the campus-based activities, which are really field-building activities and a way for us to involve presenters, students, faculty, and the community in model efforts. We're talking about a series of innovation grants, and we've had an indication of support from the Duke Foundation, which has provided some of the enlightened support in these arenas to start an innovation grant program. It's a re-granted program for all college and university presenters who are collaborating. It can't just be for the bread and butter programs that they do in the community and their series. These are really collaborations. And we're trying to encourage and support programs that not only advance practice, but more importantly, exemplify the best methods of integrating the arts on the campus, bringing in the academy, and that could serve as models or experiments for other campuses and others in the presenting field. We'd have a variety of activities supported. It could be commissions, residencies, research, project documentation. We're trying to use a process. We haven't developed the guidelines yet that'll have those campuses tell us what they're doing that they think is innovative and new, or people who are planning things that reach beyond what they've been able to do in the past. We are hoping that they'll get the commitment of several campus constituencies or maybe community-based groups that have never had access to campus resources before and really inspire the creativity of students in new ways. We would want the projects to become the basis for a set of case studies. As a service organization, I'm always concerned about the wider field. I've got 1,700 organizations, not just the dozen or so that might achieve funding through this kind of program. And how can we make those case studies broadly available to higher education students in the wider field? And how can we get people working together with some clearly defined goals for arts and for education? We're also recognizing the importance of other kinds of tools and ideas for action on American campuses. So we're talking about a university presenter handbook that might provide the kind of strategies and rubrics and models that people might use. We're talking about a creative campus index. Stephen has I hope we'll talk about that. It was one of his ideas. And again, the case studies and ways to illuminate the practice that's going on. A small part of this program is to even look at arts leadership development. What are the ways that we can develop a plan for future leaders and training programs that more effectively look at the possible career opportunities and these aspects of the performing arts and really build the kind of human and intellectual capital that's needed today to do this work in the field, as well as advance the kind of ethos of partnership and interdependence that we see as the future of the performing arts. And that's really greatly needed. That's an unfunded part of this at this point. And the related component is prioritizing the arts with higher education leaders. And Alberta's had a couple of conversations with associations in Washington, D.C. that have expressed interest in setting up either commissions or caucuses and task forces to really create study and action groups among their members. And we're looking at those that cater to presidents, provosts, deans, the decision makers on these campuses, and help to document the activities, because many of those leaders don't know what's going on throughout the campuses. There are very few like Stephen and Lee Bollinger, and there's a tremendous amount of activity that is under the radar of some of the leadership. And presenters in particular are located in a variety of contexts. Some are in student services, some are in the College of the Arts, some are separate nonprofits. So really starting to share and develop that information. I want to talk about a couple of examples. One, at the community college level, and community colleges are a force in all of this too. They don't have the same research missions as research institutions, but Miami-Dade Cultural Affairs Department, which Olga Garay headed for a number of years before she went to the Duke Foundation, which is one of our members, has a long-established reputation for really quite daring programs that make contemporary and culturally specific work more accessible to the campus and the Miami-Dade community. In 1990, she started Cultura del Lobo Performance Series, which brought in international and national performing artists to the region through extensive residencies. It provided an opportunity for public schools, other institutions, social service agencies, and the six-campus Miami-Dade college system to really not only experience the work of those artists, but to work in depth with them over time. They have a center for cultural collaborations that they formed in the late 90s, which actually commissions and produces work by U.S.-based artists and their colleagues in Latin America and the Caribbean. And they have multiple collaborations going on today with flamenco festivals, with film series and film artists, and really extend the resources of the college into the community and to nurture and expand opportunities for Florida artists. Another interesting project that has a website I want to give you, because I have to read this, it's so technical, but it's an arts, engineering, and technology project at Arizona State University. The website is http://ame.asu.edu/MotionE. And MotionE is the name of the project. It's a project of the Arts, Media, and Engineering program, which is under the College of Fine Arts at Arizona State. The Fulton School of Engineering, ASU Presents, which is the presenter, and a couple of other collaborators. And they worked with Trisha Brown and Bill T. Jones and a number of media artists, visual artists, composers to create groundbreaking interactive multimedia works using their choreography. And they used motion digital capture and analysis and computer-generated figures to mount this work. It premiered at Arizona State in April and had a New York premiere at Lincoln Center about a month later. And so it involved using state-of-the-art real-time motion capture technology and these analysis techniques to track the movement of the dancers, the structure of the choreography, and analyze it in real time, sort of spit it out, put it in a sort of interactive multimedia mode, and then the dancers moved on stage with it in the performance. So it uses artificial intelligence, human-computer interactive systems. It was quite fascinating. The idea there was that the Arts, Media, and Engineering program, which combines expertise and resources across the entire campus, they work with anthropology, architecture, design, bioengineering, Chicano studies, life sciences, computer engineering, and the like. And this project was an effort to get a better understanding of the way that the human body moves. This is how they devised it. And they wanted to improve patients' ability in rehab to move their bodies. They wanted to look at how they could encourage active learning in schools and even improve the training of dancers and artists, sports athletes in the military. So they figured that the investigation of those kinds of issues would have to go across disciplines and would have to be collaborative, and this is how this project came about. So they're studying this real-time motion analysis, but it's enhancing the interactive capabilities between humans and machines. For Trisha Brown, she said this was a learn-learn situation for me. It was really out of the realm for her. And she said she found the stage in flux in a very different way than she had ever seen before. And she knew that the dance she created had to be fluid enough in nature as the counterparts in the interactive environment, and had to try and make her movement flexible enough to sort of spin off of those technological elements. The graphics, the music, and the movement. For Bill T., he said it was just a real challenge to think about what this new technology would do to a real-time solo performance that couldn't exist in any other situation. And he based it on an older work that he had done in the 80s called 21. It was an improvisational talking dance piece, and he created a new piece called 22. And he was struck by the complexity and amount of work that went into capturing all of this technologically, reading it, analyzing it, spinning it back out. And so for him, he gained great insight into motion capture, artificial intelligence, and live performance opportunities. And he said it was really humbling and exhilarating. So at the same time they met the mission of what they wanted to do to learn about movement of the body, these artists had an extraordinary experience to work in not just a laboratory environment, but a real-time environment with these technologies. One other short example, UMichigan, which has done some amazing work extending the campus into the community and doing this on an international basis. We funded a project a couple years ago, what is it called, The Sound of the World, and it was deepening their work with the Arab-American community, which is the largest in the Dearborn, Detroit, Michigan area in the United States and actually outside of the Arab world. They work in collaboration with an organization called Access. There are a couple of people here at this meeting from the Arab-American. I can't do the whole acronym, but it's Community, Cultural, Economic, Social Service, I believe. And it was a long-term partnership they had, and they wanted to deepen it, and they wanted to see, can we develop some audiences from this? So the idea was an audience development kind of project. It started in 2004 with a long-term residency on the campus and in the community with renowned artist and oud player Shimon Shaheen, and culminated in the commission of a new work by Shimon and a community-wide and campus-wide Arab-American festival for the arts that happened last fall. Just an amazing, amazing project where they rooted it deeply in the community with dinners in homes and took the relationship just to a completely different level. Some of the contextual programs are being used by the field now that they developed. We had 6 hours at our conference a year and a half ago that UMichigan helped to develop with Access on Arabic culture and Arabic music. We have a whole world music contingency, but people thought that the Arab world was a sort of monoculture. They didn't realize it's 22 countries and cultures, and so you could come and really take in depth Arabic music, what's happening, how you really market and learn about those audiences and connect in the communities. So it's had a lot of output. We also have under our network, I have two more things and I'm going to finish, a group called the MUPS, the Major University Presenters. It's a group of our members that have formed an independent network. It's 20 of the major research institutions and their presenters. They've actually begun to collect some data and share information about their activities, and I think are beginning to realize what Stephen said, that it's 50% or more of the arts resources and activity in the United States is happening on these campuses. And so we're working in tandem with them, and they're creating a clearer picture of these multiple roles, and they've done a fantastic job of connecting with their provosts, deans, and presidents, and are meeting with them on a quarterly basis on their campuses. Next meeting's in November in Maryland. We've also extended the project reach outside of the United States. We have a project in Mexico called Gateway to the Americas, which was our attempt to really facilitate and broker relationships with our counterparts in Mexico in the presenting and touring industry and to find consistent ways to have those relationships develop and introduce the arts of contemporary Mexico to the U.S. Because there was a lot of familiarity with folkloric traditions. A year ago, there was a colloquium that mirrored what we did in a very small way at the assembly with counterparts in Mexico on the role of higher education in the arts. And Alberta and I in September went down for a follow-up meeting to talk about some binational relationships. We hope will be more one-on-one exchanges to advance this conversation and to look at what's happening here in the United States. So for us, there's a great recognition that there's significant work going on and a significant context for the performing arts on campuses. So we're doing what we can to advance those relationships, to more fully understand what's organically been happening in support of the performing arts and the wider array of arts that we hope will nurture artistic expression on the whole and help the wider field. So I'll close there.
Diane.
In a couple of instances, I've heard stories of artists on campus and some of these, you know, big multi-department collaborative-based, you know, projects expressed that, you know, because they're rarely the ones coming to the table with the grant, you know, it generally is going through the campus or through the presenter, that they feel at times that they are a
that, you know, workers for hire for some applied purpose of some other department, and it's research goals or scientific goals or desire to explore technology in a certain way, and that along the way they feel that their artistic integrity is compromised by that experience. And I think that, I would just say, because it relates directly to one of the projects that Sandra mentioned, that it's really critical as we think about how this goes forward that we understand that art, how artists can be empowered to come to the table as equal partners.
Right.
Because it's really easy for them to sort of get, I think, used in this process.
Yeah. Yeah.
And how that can be dynamic and how we make sure that their goals as artists are held on to as well in the process.
But let me respond with two things. We for about 14 years ran this Arts Partners program with funding from the Wallace Foundation and then from the Duke Foundation, and it was a model that was spelled out, and this one of the last grants was this grant to UMS, and we did an evaluation of the program and found this very thing, that we actually had to be careful that artists weren't being marginalized and were just work for hire. And part of our thrust with all the grant making we're doing today is to not only look at innovative approaches, but to look at more artist-centered approaches and to start to look at new models, new practice, not just what's been going on. And these are some of the things we'll be looking for and some of the criteria. It happens that these grants will go to presenters, but they have to be collaborations, and they have to be really equitable kinds of collaborations.
And really the situation of artists on their campuses is part of what really needs much more study.
In terms of tenure, recognition.
Well, even I have to say, in terms of the presenters.
And, yeah, absolutely.
The normal rule of the thumb, and UCLA locally is a great exemplar of it, is there's an absolute wall between artists who are in the full-time employment at the university and what presenters do. And it's very frequently, excluding at the American Assembly, when you hear about collaborations, it's with the science departments. Mm-hmm. Also, in everything you said, the assumption was artists was brought into the university. It's still missing the sort of fundamental fact that all over America, the artists are already there, and the mechanisms don't exist for them to be fostered in producing work. You're also talking about presenting. When universities co-commission, they're not producing anything. They're putting the money in.
Some are.
But very few.
Yeah, some are producing.
Very few universities invest in producing the work of artists who are not their own.
Some are.
And so there's still, I think, a huge lacuna in this thinking that's not recognizing the artists are already there.
Let me say the three examples I mentioned. The three examples I mentioned are using artists on the campus. ASU used the artists and engineers on the campus and brought in Bill T. and Tricia, but everybody else was generated from
the campus
situation.
I want you to know that this is the kind of conversation
we had
that should be going on every campus in the country.
Right. But it's rare.
It's not going on.
We have to acknowledge.
Karen was first, and then
I too have a similar comment. And my suggestion might be that an innovation grant would require joint applicants: one a presenter, two an arts professor, and three a non-practitioner arts professor, because there's often a conflict on a campus between the practitioners, the non-practitioners, and my experience of this is that actually faculty are not involved with presenters enough. When they are involved, it's a highly problematic relationship. So if you forced a collaboration from the start, that would be beneficial.
Well, I'm not sure we want to force the kind of collaboration. But I think the criteria has to drive at this, because this is about not just presenting. It's about the arts and the academy and the whole campus.
I would be concerned that I'm an ornament. I'd be brought on at a later point.
Well, in fact, the Duke grant is specifically designed to reward places where new ways of doing this work are being proposed. So that's the stimulus. I think that one of the problems we have here is that both of these good presenters have given us excellent examples of what ought to happen, but very seldom does. So
why we're here.
You've got to read this report to see what the community of higher education and the community of arts professionals thinks isn't going on, because there's not much of this at its best actually going on, which is why we need to do so much of this work.
And you're hitting on the key issue.
But
absolutely,
there's another question here, and then we're...
Oh, yeah, there are some out on the table.
Oh, yeah, there are some outside.
We've got a couple
well.
Up here, but...
I want to make sure that we get to Stephen, who has another set of answers to this. But go ahead, Marilyn.
All this activity sounds really terrific and great. I just want to know, does it, you know, if a tree falls in the forest and nobody sees it, you know, the trees still fall in the forest, but, you know, so what? I'm just wondering about all this artistic activity on campus. Who goes? Because I've been to tons of these things that are so fantastically interesting, and they're not very well attended. Are people paying for these things? Are the community presenters, is it a series? Is it free for all the students? I mean, in some colleges, I just want to say, in some colleges,
it's
a compulsory course. I mean, I was a series in Berea, Kentucky, where everybody has to go, and it's actually a course. And if people write papers on it, and it becomes embedded in the actual curriculum. Mm-hmm. But I just think this is all terrific. I just want to know who's going, and you're preaching to the choir.
Right, and that's all over the map.
Well, it is all over the map. I'm not going to let our panel try and answer those very complicated questions, but Stephen will be talking about the things we think we need to explore further as a research agenda in all of this, and we'll maybe get to it that way. Right.
And there's partly because there isn't enough dialogue. And the second thing is that I'm also after hours, like I'm married to a college president. So I go to a lot of college presidents' conferences. And if you want to get through to college presidents, the best thing I would recommend
their conferences
is bring the artists. I mean, the highlight of one of our conferences was getting put in a bus, taken to Tanglewood, hearing one of the president's trustees, all of them agreed it was the most powerful thing that had happened in all of their days of yakking and talking and literature. And or in another case, bringing Elizabeth Futrell in to speak to a group of college residents. My husband has been scheming ever since about how we can get her on campus. You have something that all of these other groups don't have.
In fact, we don't know enough about it, but it certainly would appear that every college and university campus in this country has embedded arts. And I mean embedded so that in most places it doesn't really surface. They see what goes up on the marquee on some space or another on campus, and they are vaguely aware that the arts matter to their students and to some of their faculty members, but the fact that the arts are both fundamental and essential to the life of higher education, their students and their faculty members, is still something that hasn't come into focus. And the college and university presidents that were at the assembly were stunned. It was a little like they were discovering they were speaking prose and had been all along. They were just kind of amazed at the extent to which they were already involved and engaged and supporting arts, and the extent to which they hadn't focused on it, lifted it up, made it a priority in their own work. So it's part of what makes this so exciting is that it's all sitting there waiting to be lifted.
Yes.
Another comment right there. Quickly.
I just wanted to add that in the work that we've been doing, it's a project that's 3 years ago. Reaching the end of the first pilot year, it's prompted me to start thinking and writing about the consciousness of innovation, because sometimes I just think we have to just wake up in the morning and decide to do it differently, or God darn it, it's not going to happen.
And I
just want to say to the funders that this is the kind of work that just takes so much time. What you're describing is a political minefield for the faculty to come forward as an artist who's not recognized by the presenter, to have the presenter not acknowledge them in their season. I mean, this is
50, 70 years in the making in terms of calcification. And I'm on campus like twice a month at my partner colleges just to be there, just to be like a, you know, it's something about the consciousness of innovation that just takes so much time to get these relationships to the point where you can have a fruitful conversation and a dialogue that's not about the way we usually do it is.
Yeah. Right. There's another comment over here, and then I'd like to,
to
Kurt.
Steven.
Just real quickly, I just wanted to, we have talked about a lot of successes, and this is inspiring. It gets you up on the edge of your seat. And but I think, I just want to make a couple of observations. I think one of the challenges is I think some good things are happening out there are more efforts to work across disciplines on campus. We've talked a lot about things that are still in silos.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that there are a lot of efforts to try to work between museums and also the performing arts and public radio on campus,
mm-hmm.
and for that matter, offices on diversity on campus, and student affairs that are promoting programs differently. And I think part of this goes to the heart of this issue, and I know on our own campus we've created something called Cultural Engagement Council, monthly, which has all, includes even as the vice president for student affairs there, who sits there and we talk about how we're going to infuse arts and culture across a research one institution, not an easy thing to do. But the other challenge is the administrative structures itself within universities, and maybe Stephen's going to talk about this, because it's the reporting lines challenge that Stephen mentioned earlier. We report all differently if you're at a cultural unit on a campus,
right.
And it's very hard.
Yeah.
The last thing I would just say is that I may have mentioned something like this in another session, but I really think there's this phenomenon of civic engagement that's going on in universities. Campuses and the movement and this creation of there are a new group, 70 universities that are part of this Carnegie group, calling themselves engaged universities, and they're pushing very hard to have culture as a part of that. It's a very exciting new phenomenon. Just in the past year, it's starting to move. And I just think that there are great opportunities, and we have to figure out, culture has to make sure we're at the table when this all happens.
Right.
But I think it's not just about experiences for training students in the arts, but it's training a future citizenry in this country that creates a more supportive environment for the arts and our future donor base and all those things. So we have a stake in this much more deeply.
Absolutely. A lot of what needs to happen is the integration of arts and culture into the higher education framework, into the higher education environment in a much, much deeper and more meaningful way. Lots of colleges and universities are putting up new performance centers and new museums, but they don't seem to even relate those buildings to the fundamental missions of those universities. I think we should move on to Stephen because
he's got an important piece that starts to tie this together.
Yes, he has a very important piece because we're all talking about what we don't know.
Right.
I'm going to waste some of my very little time left describing this beautiful Curb Center pen. This is Art Deco, and one person in this room has earned this pen. Several people have suffered through two of my talks. Karen has, and Diane has, and Alberta has, and Joe has, and Ellen has, but only Marion Godfrey has suffered through three.
here at this conference.
Oh, how badly we need Steve.
Okay, so I don't know if I'm answering anything that has come up in the panel. I'm repeating a lot, but as I know with my own students, if I don't repeat things, they won't understand them or remember them. 4 years ago when I was at Princeton, I started teaching a class on creativity and innovation, looking at the social conditions for it. And teaching about creativity is a lot like teaching about health and nutrition. It has certain spillover effects outside of the classroom. So, of course, nutritionists see bad health everywhere, right? It's in their cupboards. It's in the grocery store. It's in the restaurant when they go eat. So I kept seeing obstacles to creativity everywhere around me, and mainly in my own campuses where I was working. So around at the same time, I think Alberta and Sandra asked me to help work on this Creative Campus American Assembly meeting. And from the beginning, I think one of the motivations clearly has been to just try to amplify the importance of the arts on college campuses. But I thought that we needed to ask, in addition to that question about amplification, whether we really were creative places. Were campuses really fostering the conditions that produce creativity? or were we sort of creative in spite of ourselves, which was my instinct. Out of that, I wrote a piece for the Chronicle of Higher Education called The Creative Campus, Who's Number One, and that's where I suggested this this idea, which I didn't think anyone would take seriously, but Sandra has, that universities ought to create some kind of index or ranking of creativity, since campuses are ranked by so many other factors. There are about several dozen different college rankings in this campus, ranking in this country, ranking universities from everything from student-teacher ratio to how much beer gets consumed to how handicap accessible they are to their political positions. Don't you think incoming students want to know about the creative climate of a campus when selecting where they want to go to study? So that was the motivation for that piece. And I concluded that creativity thrives on those campuses where there's an abundant amount of cross-cultural exchange. We've heard about that kind of exchange today. A lot of border activity between disciplines, where collaborative work is commonplace, where risk-taking is rewarded, failure is expected, and creative arts are pervasive and integrated into campus life. So those conditions there kind of wrap up a lot of what we've been talking about. So beyond examining the conditions, it's important to think about how we would explore or measure these conditions. What would an index look like? What would a research agenda on the creative campus look like? And in the absence of a well-established research community, we've gotten a small grant from Ford to bring together scholars to begin to think through what this agenda should look like. We're going to meet first in Austin, Texas, in a few weeks, and then at Vanderbilt next fall. So at the Vanderbilt meeting will be a bigger meeting, and we hope that if some of you are interested, we'd like your input. So I can't lay out all of the research questions, and we don't know them yet since we haven't had our meetings. But I want to first reiterate clearly that universities are probably the biggest patrons of the arts in this country. That's been repeated several times, and I'm sure their collective support and patronage is much larger than the people who come to this conference. So it's really a site that we need to know about, and we need to figure out how to intervene in to leverage our resources. So it's important to describe the scope of this activity. We don't know much about it. We don't know how much of it's happening, and help universities' presidents see that they have a major responsibility as patrons. So counting, how many commissions, how many artists are on our campus? We don't even know how many artists are on our campuses. You may know how many visual artists, but collectively we don't know how many artists are on our campus. How many degrees are awarded? We don't know that. How many theater spaces? How many community members are served by campus-based arts activities? How much public sculpture exists on college campuses? We don't know that. So we need to know how big this universe is, and then what ways college campuses serve as catalysts in our larger arts ecology as incubators of new work and as sources and diffusion for artistic and aesthetic ideas. That's the first set of questions we need to ask. They're counting questions. The second are what I would call the inside the black box questions, and it kind of is similar to a conference session title from yesterday, Where is Creativity? And just a brief aside, we all know about the MacArthur grants. This was brought up in the session the other day. Is there a MacArthur officer in the room? No. Okay, so $500,000 extraordinary to 20 extraordinary people every spring to do whatever they want with it. Great program, but from a sociological perspective, it reinforces the dominant myth of the individual creative genius, the scientist alone in her lab, or the artist alone in his garret. It ignores the social structures that underlie this creative work. It's important not only to recognize who these luminaries are, but equally important to understand the often invisible pathways and tracks along which creative work flows. And that's what Alberta was talking about all this work that's percolating that we don't bring up and recognize. Where are the creative hubs on campus? Who are the creativity brokers? Are there important gaps in the structure of creative work? We need to map the contours of a campus's artistic and creative life, everything from campus radio presenters to the campus presenters that Sandra's talking about. And we need to pay attention to the facilities and spaces and think about what is a creative space? Do we have enough of them? And what's the mix between private and public spaces on our campuses as it relates to creativity and culture? Another inside the black box set of questions revolves around student engagement. Someone mentioned that one of the things we've known for forever is that colleges and universities are the greatest predictors of participation later in life, even when you control for everything else, like education, like class and background. Those people that go to colleges, all other things equal, are going to participate more. We have no idea what goes, why that happens. What is going on inside the black box that leads to long-term engagement? What is happening on college campuses that flips on the switch for students, for some students, and sets them up for a life of participation? We need to ask those questions and answer them. What are the pathways to involvement for students on college campuses? Some students get involved in the arts, some students don't. We don't know which ones do and why, and what determines that. Some students come to the campuses expecting to get involved in the arts, and then they don't. What a wasted opportunity for campuses to engage them. The last big area of investigation involves the why we should care questions. From the view of a college president, the kinds of questions I just asked are really arts questions. What is it about the creative campus that advances a university's mission? And I think if you read the book, the American Assembly Report, there's a lot in there about how the arts advance the mission. But if we don't articulate that in our research and show the connections, certainly we can't expect presidents to allocate additional resources, let alone to protect the resources they already allocate. So the first things that the arts are likely to do for campuses is they serve as bait to attract some of the most interesting and curious students around the country. This is like Richard Florida's argument about the creative class, that they're looking for interesting and funky places to work. Well, we shouldn't expect that students are looking for anything less interesting as a place to live and learn, right? So as a president of an elite institution, which I will remain anonymous, only say that I once was a part of that institution. investing in the arts is one way to attract those blue-haired students that we so desperately need to make this an interesting place. So we need better research on how the arts serve as attractors for potential recruits. Another why we care question, and I will finish before we have to leave, involves the extent to which artistic presentations and artistic knowledge can help students learn better. We've been doing this for K through 12 education for a while now, trying to figure out how the arts make students learn. But what's happening in our college campuses? To what extent, when we link up these wonderful programs into our curriculum, do the students actually learn the material better? Do they engage with the academic and intellectual material better? We don't know that. We haven't asked those questions, and we haven't done the research. College presidents should also care about the arts because they provide important social glue for their campuses and communities, and this is the point that Kurt just made. Mm-hmm. But we, again, don't know how this works. Do they serve as social glue because they form a kind of bridging social capital, which is a distinction that Robert Putnam makes, which is I join an art group, and all of a sudden I look to my left and my right, and there are these kids that are not like me, and that's wonderful. Or, like an African-American step group, perhaps it's a bonding social capital. Mm-hmm. When you're feeling otherwise uneasy in the campus, you know, waves and unsettling seas, bonding social capital is really important to secure your identity and to move forward with confidence in your own academic and creative work. So bonding or bridging, we don't know. How about mediating social tensions or fostering tolerance on campus? In what ways do the arts connect students to their communities? We know a little bit more about service learning programs, because campuses have been kind of all excited about those over the last decade. But what about the arts as service learning, as connecting to communities? Finally, the last why we care question involves issues of human capital, training, and careers. We hear a lot about the creative economy. What role do universities and colleges have for training students for this creative economy? How do the artistic and creative skills that they might learn in college, both in the classroom and outside the classroom, in their avocational activity, help these students to succeed in the new economy? So I feel a bit like a Talmudic scholar here. You know, you sort of, sure, God gave us the arts, and God gave us higher education institutions. We love them both, but what do they have to do with each other? Mm-hmm. And the number of questions, as a Talmudic scholar would say, are endless. We can ask these questions forever. Or perhaps, as Donald Rumsfeld has said, he provides a better analogy when asked by reporters hard questions. Here's what he often says, and you've probably heard him say this before. There are things that we know, and then there are things that we don't know. And there are things that we don't know that we don't know. And unfortunately, as far as the creative campus goes, I think Rumsfeld couldn't have said it any better.
All three apply. All three apply. You're here.
We don't have very much time left, but Sarah, you asked a question that I put off a long time ago. We're moving at the moment in three directions on these huge, huge questions. One is building a research agenda, which Stephen has just spoken about. What do we need to know? And we don't know very much about what's going on campuses concerning the arts, and we need to know a whole lot more. So we're bringing scholars together to help us develop the beginnings of a research agenda. And it's not, I think it's fair to say, Stephen, a very profound research agenda yet, because we need data. I mean, there's just a lot of very basic stuff that we don't really know before we can get to the more interesting and difficult questions about the arts on American campuses. So that's one thing that we're moving ahead on, and for which we have a little money from the Ford Foundation, which is supporting the kind of work that Stephen just described so eloquently. We have money, as Sandra mentioned, from the Duke Foundation to find and perhaps inspire designs on college campuses that will extend the work of presenters and take them closer to working with faculty, with administrators, with students to design work on campuses that will actually go beyond the stage that's being put up in that new performing arts center for which they're looking for audience, but so far not looking for a whole lot more, right. And we want them to look for a whole lot more. And Duke's money will help us make a beginning on that. I think that's a huge challenge, and it's going to take more even than what Duke is giving us. And Duke is looking at it from primarily the presenter side, which is extremely important, but not the only way to look at this.
In our concept paper, that's not the entry point at all.
So. Well, that's true. And thirdly, we know we need to work hard to engage higher education leadership, provosts, presidents, scholars in all of this, because otherwise the conversation is going to be extremely lopsided. So we will be looking for funds to work through the higher education associations, of which there are dozens, to reach presidents, provosts, senior professors, and engage them in this conversation.
I encourage you to talk to a man named Don Ramble, who just left the University of Chicago as its president and now has the Mellon Foundation. And I think he gets some.
Now has which foundation?
Oh, the Mellon.
Mellon. Yes. He's not quite there yet. But
I think his transition is going to be interesting, and you should tap into his thinking.
Yeah.
And we understand there's some interest in these kinds
this
of things.
It's a huge undertaking, and most American assemblies don't move in this direction at all. So we're also adding to the assembly's way of doing business a much heavier research and thrust forward in practice than has been.
I'm thinking the accrediting agencies across the country are another audience, because we're in the middle of an accreditation process. And this kind of thinking is absolutely discouraged by the way that these six regional accrediting agencies, I mean, the artists, validating the artists and their work on the campuses, one huge piece of that I'm sure conservatories know about, that working with your presenters, I mean, that's one piece of the accrediting pie that is so far out of how the universities validate themselves in terms of their own work. Creative stuff, so that's a key audience.
And that came up at the assembly. I think that's really was an under discussed area, as was the training area. It's huge, huge, huge. And I'm hoping some of the research will start to give us some information there.
Every 5 to 10 years, every university has to tell each other what they're doing.
What they're doing.
Right.
Accept that.
We have to remember that once upon a time, social historians weren't acceptable. African American studies wasn't acceptable. Even when they were skulking around on the campus, they hadn't been acknowledged and lifted and dignified.
But let me just add a point, which is at this point in the life of our institutions, we're as likely to be criticized by the by the creditors for investing money in something that is so radically tangential to our educational purposes. So it's a big road.
But this is why it has to be connected to the mission. It's got to be.
There is a relationship that's been formed between the American Associations of Teacher Colleges and the Arts Education Partnership. And the Arts Education Partnership has been invited to present to their annual conference this spring in San Diego. And there's really a serious discussion about teacher colleges investing in the arts and the arts communities in their geographies. Also, talking about things that are already going on, connecting universities to the arts communities that are not visible. A lot of campuses are using their arts programming to recruit new students. They're working with high schools. And there's a lot of interesting stuff going on that really needs to be lifted up and made visible and intentional. And the other is, and I want to go back to Vanna's comment, that arts management programs are starting to develop programs where they're embedding students in cultural organizations, where the cultural organizations are becoming actual teachers. And I just heard a presentation this morning here on some projects around archiving now defunct, highly innovative arts organizations from the last 50 years. A really exciting project. But there are university students who would die to have access to these archives of these major innovative institutions. And there should be coursework set up where there's a really productive relationship, a win-win relationship between the needs of on-the-ground, small and mid-sized cultural organizations and students who are really trying to enter into careers in curating and management.
And there's some of that going on, but it's not at a level of scale. I know we have a research internship.
But there's a lot going on all over the country that's not visible.
Right,
that's right.
Right. There's a lot of inventory that's needed.
We have to look at it. Yeah.
Yep. Well, we haven't embedded. I mean, one thing to find out is how much is going on, and it's enormous.
Right.
And the other thing to find out is how embedded,
Is it?
How secure is it?
Yeah.
How acknowledged is
That's
it?
Right.
How important is it in the life, overall life of a campus?
Yeah.
And
that's
both
the
of
point
those,
of this.
Both of those things need a lot of attention. Anybody else? I think I need to let you go. I hope we got enough across.
Thank you. And we got great input. Thank you.
We did get great input.
Yeah, this is excellent.